This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The discovery of what is now known as the Griffin Warrior has landed high praise for two researchers from the University of Cincinnati, Classics Department Head Jack Davis and Senior Research Associate Sharon Stocker. Spent much of their time in Greece, and they made several groundbreaking archaeological discoveries in Pylos that are shaping our understanding of ancient Greece, including unearthing this tomb of this ancient warrior. The president of Greece awarded them the Order of the Phoenix, one of the most prestigious awards given in Greece, for their work. I spoke with both of them earlier. Here is our pre-recorded conversation. And joining us now is University of Cincinnati Classics Department Head, Dr. Jack Davis. Jack, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you very much, Michael. Glad to be here.
And University of Cincinnati Classics Department Senior Research Associate, Dr. Sharon Stocker. Sherry, thank you for being with us as well.
Hi, Michael. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Well, it's a pleasure to have both of you. Congratulations on this incredible honor bestowed upon you by the nation of Greece. So you have been in Greece for decades looking into things like this. I've set up for the audience what it is that you found. Jack, could you help us understand why this is so significant?
Well, for lots of different reasons. For one thing, it celebrates a continuous Cincinnati tradition at the Palace of Nestor. Carl Blagan, on behalf of the University of Cincinnati, discovered the site and first excavated there in 1939. And there's been a Cincinnati presence there ever since.
He wanted to do what you're doing now, right? But wasn't able to.
Well, there were those who thought that he found everything that there was to be found. And we were essentially bought into that story and weren't at all sure what was left to be discovered. We didn't come to Pylos with the intention of finding graves or treasure. We came here to investigate the town around the palace, which sits on an acropolis. We wanted to learn more about how the normal, non-elite people live. But as so often happens in the case of archaeology, you play the hand that you're dealt.
And so we actually did not find the lower town, but instead we found the burial grounds for those who lived on the Acropolis in the earlier buildings that then became the Palace of Nestor.
Well, Sherry, talk to me about what it must be like when you realize what you found, when you find what you ultimately called the Griffin Warrior.
It was truly amazing. It was very, very exciting. It was also very stressful for a lot of different reasons, but it's just incredibly moving to look on such an amazing amount of treasures and the individual with whom they were buried, and to think that the material is so old, about 3,500 years old, and it's been lying there untouched for centuries, millennia, actually. So it's a wonderful experience.
Jack,
in such an unassuming location, you would never have thought that there would be such a find in this particular location. There's nothing to mark it out as at all special on the surface of the ground.
Jack, we heard Sherry say untouched, and that's significant to note because these types of sites aren't just disturbed by researchers. There have been throughout history thieves who get into these. And I also read that there was a potential nearby threat from a tree in its roots that this site nearly missed. So how significant is it to find something so intact?
It's almost never happens. A grave of this magnificence with so many finds. There are so many different categories of artifacts that were buried along with this fellow. To find a grave of this importance untouched, something like this hadn't happened in 60 years. Our finds are in some ways comparable to those made even earlier at the end of the 19th century by Heinrich Schliemann at Mycenae. it's just the last thing in the world that we thought we were going to discover.
And the irony is that actually the discovery of the Griffin-Moyer grave was, for us, plan B. We had never intended to work in this particular field. So sometimes whoever runs the universe has better plans than we ourselves could formulate.
And we are.
And the reason, you know, the reason that it was a plan B was we had started, 7 or 8 years ahead of time to purchase a piece of land that we thought looked very promising for excavation. And for various reasons, the purchase got held up in court in a long expropriation hearing. And it wasn't ready for us to dig there on the first day of excavation.
In 2015,
yeah. And owing to the kindnesses of the Greek Ministry of Culture, they allowed us to dig on a nearby field, on an adjacent field. And on the very first day of excavation, there it was. We hit the top of this grave.
On the very first day?
Very first day.
The very first day. There were a few stones that were visible on the surface of the earth, and they formed a rough corner. And so we were testing the field with a series of excavation units all the way down a hill. So we decided to put in a test trench there. And lo and behold, we knew by the end of the first day that we had something significant, but we didn't know just how significant until about a week later when we hit the first piece of bronze.
Okay, so maybe you could help us understand the business that you're in. When you come across and you see that you have found something, and then a week later you know it's something significant, what happens? Who gets told? What type of information are you dealing with? How secret is it?
Well, in our case, it was very secret. We told the Ministry of Culture immediately, and our representative from the Ministry of Culture. We also told the head guard at the site where we work. But we did not tell anyone else because we soon came to understand that the grave was full of gold and semi-precious stones and silver and material that is ripe for looting. So we did not let word get out to the general community at all. In fact, we had a code word for gold that we used with people who were actually doing the excavating. We called it a pebble, so that anybody who might be passing wouldn't know that we were actually talking about pieces of gold that were in there.
Oh, wow. How clever. We are talking.
Michael,
yeah, please go ahead, Jack.
I immediately freaked out over the whole thing because, you know, normally the length of our excavation seasons are constrained by Greek law to eight weeks, and there was just no way that we were going to dig this deposit in 8 weeks. So, logistically, we needed to get special permission. Fortunately, we did. The people in charge drove down immediately, had a look, and said, "Keep digging as long as you need to dig until you're finished with it." And Sherry largely dug this by herself for most of about 5 months. The other issue was money. And I'm still in a state of shock over that. It's not only incredibly expensive to dig this, but almost every artifact that we found of several thousand requires conservation. And conservation is very, very tricky, especially when you've got a mixture of metals, in some places glued to each other, that need to be separated and then restored. It's very, very tricky business.
So you're saying it costs a lot of pebbles?
A lot of pebbles. That's exactly right. More pebbles than we actually have.
And we are talking to two professors from the University of Cincinnati Classics Department, the department head, Dr. Jack Davis, and senior research associate, Dr. Sharon Stalker. They were both awarded one of Greece's most prestigious award, Commander of the Order of the Phoenix, thanks to an astonishing Bronze Age discovery that they found, the tomb of an ancient Greek leader that they have called the Griffin Warrior. Well, let's talk about this Griffin Warrior, Sherry. What do we know about him?
We know that he was probably about 30 to 35 when we died, and he was probably about 5'6". We can tell that he was of robust build from the shape of his bones. We've done a facial reconstruction, so we have some idea of how he looked, but we know that he was an extremely important person in the community, and he probably fulfilled several roles at the time, both military as a social leader and probably some type of religious leader. And we can make that determination on the basis of the objects with which he was buried.
Jack, tell us about some of these objects. We had touched a little bit on some of it. I read about seal stones, which are very significant.
Seal stones are very significant. They're actually very functional on the island of Crete for the Minoan civilizations. They're used to mark ownership in a variety of ways. And they had been used for hundreds of years before the Griffin Warrior died and was buried. What is extraordinary is that the Griffin Warrior had about 55 such seals made of hard stones of amethyst and agate and carnelian. And they're all carved with intricate designs, and some of the design. But here's the interesting thing: he was collecting these, but they weren't being used. They weren't being used in mainland Greece for any functional purpose that we know. They weren't being used to seal things. It was more of a collection of precious objects that were gathered together by him. Some of them are. Probably the most extraordinary one is something that we've called the Pylos combat agate. It's a miniature piece of art, the likes of which have never been discovered in the history of prehistoric Greek archaeology. The intricacy of the design is truly mind-blowing. And there are those who have seen it who have even doubted that it could have been produced during the Greek Bronze Age. Some of the modes of representation remind one of art from the time of Alexander the Great.
Or the Renaissance.
But at least 1,000 years later.
Wow.
Whoever did it was way ahead of his time.
And just from an academic perspective, I understand that people in your line of research have long debated what was this relationship between the Minoans that you just referenced and the Mycenaeans? What does this do in bridging any gap in that knowledge?
Well, I think it shows that that they were in very close contact at this particular period of time. We don't know exactly what that means, but the Griffin Warrior was buried with a number of objects that look as if they might have been produced on Crete. We don't have evidence that they were producing seal stones of this nature on the mainland. So in some way, he was able to acquire this material. He was buried at a time when the interaction between the Mycenaeans on the mainland and the Minoans in Crete could perhaps have been militaristic. But it's also possible that they had trade relations. So that's something that we're trying to figure out now to see if we can determine more about the nature of the relationship at Pylos specifically during the time when the Griffin Warrior was alive.
Well, tell us why that's important, if you can, from like an elementary perspective, why we want to know what this relationship between these two different cultures was.
Yeah, well, it was a time when in the previous 500 years on the Greek mainland, nothing very much was going on. It was a time of impoverishment. And what is going on at this particular time is there are various groups of people jostling for power among themselves. And what seems to have happened here is that these individuals are drawing on Cretan ideas, Cretan art, Cretan philosophies in order to reinforce their positions and to strengthen their positions. So at a very basic level, it gives us an idea, I think, of how a state, a very complex society, a political unit, can be founded in an area where it didn't previously exist by drawing on outside stimuli and making really conscious choices about what is borrowed and how it's implemented in their own area.
We are talking with Drs. Jack Davis and Sharon Stocker, professors in the University of Cincinnati Classics Department, who were recently honored with the Order of Phoenix, one of the most prestigious honors handed down by the country of Greece, for some of their discoveries that they have made while researching there, including the tomb of an ancient Greek leader that they have called the Griffin Warrior. Jack, when the university announced this, you referenced Greece as your second home. And I'm wondering if you can help us back over here in Cincinnati. What is the significance to the Greek people even now when discoveries like this take place? I mean, obviously, historic preservation in a place like Greece compared to historic preservation in the United States is quite different.
Well, there's times I wonder if it's really my second home or my first home. I need to try to explain this to my mother in Worcester, Ohio, why I'm here. And Sherry lives here all year round. She's hardly ever back in the States. So for her, it truly is her first home. But to answer your question more directly, the area that we live in here, and because we're speaking to you from Pylos, Greece right now, this area is undergoing an economic resurgence of the like that it's never seen before. And the purpose here is to move a rather backward area, an area that's rather backward economically, to generate jobs and to grow the economy. And for us, we feel like we're a part of that process. And I know that the Greeks themselves who live here feel that we're a part of the process. We're working together to try to ensure intelligent and sustainable development in the area. And we've been pretty successful in improving the area and the archaeological resources of the area to get people more to come here to see. And that leads to an increase in tourism.
Also, the discovery was made in the summer of 2015. And at that time, Greece's economy was collapsing. So they were very, very dark days. The banks had closed. People were not allowed to withdraw money. There was a lot of hardship. And so what we saw when the find was announced was just a tremendous amount of local pride at a time when all of the news was very, very bleak. And so we found that to be especially moving, that the story of the Griffin Warrior was something that was happy at a time when people were despairing. And so it was something that all of Greece, but especially the local community, could look at and say, wow, you know, this is our heritage and it's a really wonderful thing.
But we were all over the Greek media for weeks and we still are, in fact, in high demand for interviews and participation in documentaries here. It is very meaningful. One thing that people back home didn't realize in 2015 was that we couldn't get money. Mm-hmm. And people were saying, well, just go to the American Express office or just go to the Western Union office. And we had to say, there aren't any. They're closed too. They're subject to the same banking regulations and restrictions. So on top of everything else, the challenge of carrying out the excavation, we were very challenged to keep the project running financially, just in terms of access to hard cash.
Yeah, most of them shut down that summer. So we've been through a lot of difficult times with that and now with COVID, and it's certainly been an interesting ride.
One of our colleagues offered to come from Italy with a big bag of cash, but it didn't quite come to that.
Well, you can always count on the Italians when they can get to you. Bless them. Well, let me ask you a little bit more about how it works over there? You spend, Sherry, it sounds like you're there year round. Jack, you try to get home to visit your mom in Worcester when you can, but you're there pretty much a lot as well. What's the living situation like for you all as researchers based there? And how many people are you with? And how has it worked during quarantine?
Well, in 2015, as we've been discussing, we found the grave of the Griffin Warrior, and we finally took possession of the field that we had hoped to work in 2018. And on the very first day of excavation there, we discovered two new monumental beehive-shaped tombs. And these are huge tombs. The larger of the two is 36 feet across and 15 feet deep. So I had never intended to be here full time, but in 2015, with the material from the Griffin Warrior, it was necessary to have someone on the ground to start the process of conservation. And when we discovered the monumental tombs in 2018, the Ministry of Culture asked us to excavate these on a year-round basis, which is basically unheard of because they were concerned about looting. So I have been excavating continuously for quite a long time now. It's been very difficult under the age of COVID, during the age of COVID, but we have managed. And last year, when everything shut down, we had a group of people here who were unable, actually, to make it home. We have someone from Australia, and we have a few people from Italy. We have some Greeks who actually could have gone home, some Americans. And so we were forced, actually, to stay together and to figure out a way to live and work. And we did that by living in a bubble, as people often do who are working together, which meant that nobody really went out in public. We went to work every day, and we went home, and we cooked for ourselves, and we only socialized among ourselves. So we were able to work hard and to have some good times in a very difficult period, and to continue with our work on an uninterrupted basis. We were very, very fortunate because we were one of the only projects in Greece who was able to operate last summer.
So you mean
Sherry and I have a house, or we rent an apartment here in Pylos, and we rent several other apartments in the town for members of our project, which is when they're needed and when they're here.
And so you all live together, the two of you. You're not in like a large house where all the researchers are living.
No, we're married, and we have been for, we've been together for 26 years now.
We were counting last night.
So we live together with our cat, Nestor, who is now 9 years old.
I have to ask, who is Nestor named for? I imagine that has something to do with the site that you've been excavating.
The Palace of Nestor, that's correct. When he was a baby kitty and I found him in the middle of the road, he needed to come to work with me. This was in 2012. So he's very familiar with the Palace of Nestor, and he does indeed think that it's his own.
As cats do, and as they are probably correct. Well, let me ask you, as we start to wind this down, it's been such a fascinating conversation that could definitely go on. So you found these significant things, this Griffin Warrior, you found additional Gold Line family tombs a few years after that. Do you want there to be more under that ground?
No, we don't. We have found enough to last a lifetime, and I will be very happy when we are finished excavating these two new Tholos tombs.
And I'm 9 years older than she is, so I'll turn 71 this summer, and you know, one begins to think about wrapping things up rather than expanding efforts at this point in time.
Well, congratulations on the discoveries you have made. Congratulations on the honor you received from the nation of Greece. This has been such a joy to learn about all of this. There is much more to learn. I've got a link to more details at wvxu.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. My great thanks to Professors Jack Davis and Sharon Stocker of the University of Cincinnati Classics Department. Jack, Sherry, thank you so much for spending part of your day with us and taking a little break from all that great work you're doing.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity to talk about our work in Greece. We really appreciate it.
Thanks much, Michael.
pleasure to be with you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.